Welcome again to the Friday postgame show. I'm all solo here. And if you're expecting a lot of interesting stories from Latin America and all sorts of different perspectives on things, I'm sad to disappoint you from the get-go. All we're going to do today is obituaries. So I apologize for that. I hope it doesn't bring everyone down too much on right before a holiday weekend. And I'll be honest, the reason I'm doing all obituaries is like I couldn't quite come up with stories that were interesting. There's a bunch of things I might want to talk about, but I'll have to wait for Malcolm to come back for those. So Cenk and Anna and the rest of the crew do a post-game show every day after the show. But on Fridays, everyone likes to kick out a little early, but the members need something. So there's always a pre-recorded Friday post-game show, and that's what I am delivering for you today. So let's just jump into these obituaries. Some will be longer, some will be very short. And I'm going to stop apologizing for the nature of the show and just start doing it. So the first one is Charles Thacker, who was a trailblazer in personal computer design. He passed away in California at the age of 74. He is one of these guys who worked at the Xerox Palo Alto facility, the Palo Alto Research Center, which is now legendary because that's where all the great ideas for the personal computer as we know them were born. And then Steve Jobs visited them in the early 70s and took all of their ideas and then implemented them as he built Apple and the Macintosh. But Charles Thacker was a physicist born and educated in California. He went to work at Park, and he was one of the few leaders and innovators who came up with all the ideas that we know of the personal computer, the graphical interface, the mouse, and the way people interact with it. So that's really all I have to say about Charles Thacker. My whole point is to bring up one last time people who had quite an important influence in the world, but normally would not get much attention, especially on a show like this. Second editorial is a New York legend. Anyone who grew up watching TV news in New York knows and has seen Gabe Pressman. Now, this one I have a little more interesting to say on it. So Gabe Pressman was a legendary Channel 4 or WNBC news reporter, local news in New York. He's 93 years old, and he was still working. This guy, if you grew up in New York in the, I guess, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, he was legendary. By the end of the 90s, nobody watched these shows anyway, so you might never have heard of him. But he was on there in the little kitchen TV set all the time through growing up. Now that I was growing up, and many millions of others in the New York area. Now, he was a good, legitimate, hardworking reporter, and I give him credit for that. On the other hand, he spent his career in TV news, and that's not where you're going to get a lot of good reporting, I'm sorry to say. And this obituary, which I'm going to jump into, kind of interweaves that. You see how respected and respectable this man is, and at the same time, how silly his career at times was. And it's just interweaved right into the way this obituary is written. So Gabe Pressman, the senior correspondent for WNBC, passed away. He chased breaking news, interviewed countless celebrities, covered the hoopla of politics, protests, and parades for more than six decades. Yes, he covered politics, protests, and parades, but he was a local TV news reporter. So he covered the hoopla of it, not the deep substance of it. And he interviewed a lot of celebrities, and that's what made him famous. Now, he chased down a lot of local stories, no question about it, and he was very aggressive in that matter. And he did his own work, he did his own writing, his own reporting, and I give big props to him for that. But it wasn't investigative, long-form, written journalism. He would chase down a story, splash it onto the TV news, maybe a couple follow-ups, and then that was it. Earlier this year, he covered the St. Patrick's Day parade. Now, that's great. It's a big institutional event in New York City, but it's just a parade. And yeah, every year there's some conflicts about whether they're going to let gay rights or gay Irish groups march in the parade or not. But it's not really that important. And it is not a substitute for doing real stories, even though it's big in New York. And here are some of the other stories he covered and that are noted in his obituary. The sinking of the Andrea Doria, big ship off Nantucket. Again, sinking of big ships is big news, gets a lot of splashy headlines, pardon the pun, but it's not that, you know, it's those are tragedies. Those are not real investigative news stories. He covered the arrival of the Beatles in 1964 to New York. Huge cultural story, but not real news. He covered the 1969 Woodstock Festival, also a huge story, but not real news. He did cover the power blackouts in 1965 and 1977, and countless plane crashes, subway accidents, transit strikes, political scandals, and elections and protests, and the terror attacks in 1993 and 2001. Terrorist attacks. All right, so he covered all those big events, some of them iconic events in New York, but many of them just not that important because he was covering TV news. So that's the point. His list of people he interviewed is great. Fidel Castro, Golda Meir, Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, Casey Stengel, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, MLK, Eleanor Roosevelt, Bella Abzug, and every mayor and governor of New York in the past 50 years, and every president from Harry Truman to Bill Clinton. So this guy was an institution, big time. And he did great work, and he did write and report his own stuff, but he was a TV news reporter, I'm sorry to say. And I want to talk a little bit about the details of his life, because he's a quintessential New Yorker, born in the Bronx in 1924. His early pieces as a kid were about his grandmother's sponge cake and his cousin's first tooth. He started a newspaper at his school. He attended NYU. He, like all people of his generation, served during World War II in the Navy as a communications officer. And then he got his master's degree from Columbia University in journalism and then launched his reporter career in some local markets and then eventually in the New York main market. So that's Gabe Pressman, a New York institution. He pretty much personifies what local news TV reporters were for all the good and bad that they were for all those decades. So let's move on to now another short obituary. Elias Burstein, 99 years old, innovative physicist. He was very important in developing the physics that allowed us to use silicon semiconductors, which is the backbone of the entire microelectronics industry and almost everything we do in our lives today. So, I'm not going to get into his physics or anything, but this is an example. He lived 99 long productive years, very important influence in modern life. And someone probably most or almost everybody, nobody has ever heard of. Elias Burstein. So I want to honor him with a Dave Kohler RIP here. He actually never completed his PhD in physics because, as he said, he was too busy. Yeah, he was too busy actually doing work and research and applications in physics, and he never got around to formally completing his PhD. He is another quintessential New York guy. So that I like to call these out because it's like a dying breed. So he was born in Brooklyn. He's Jewish. He attended Brooklyn College. These days, Brooklyn College does not have much of a reputation or a high profile, but it was an excellent, Brooklyn College, City College, those were excellent ways to get a low cost, terrific education in New York in the mid-century. And Elias Burstein did that. And then after that, he went on to get a master's from the University of Kansas. He studied at MIT, but like I said, never completed his PhD. And he was also of the generation that had to fight in World War II. He also went to the Navy and worked at the Naval Research Laboratory during the war and stayed there for a long time after. And finally passed away recently at age 99. So that's Elias Burstein, famous physicist. Next obituary here is Hope Ryden, 87 years old, a photographer and protector of wildlife. She apparently had some turns in her life. So she was born in Massachusetts, and she became a Pan Am flight attendant. Pan Am is a defunct airline, or maybe it's back, I don't know. But she was a flight attendant. And when she had time off, she would go around taking breaks, vacations, and going around taking photographs. And she got into animals mostly, and then became a very well-known, respected, high-profile protector of animals and species. And especially in the United States, she started or was influential in the movement to protect wild horses out in the West. They were rapidly disappearing until people like her stepped up and raised consciousness in society, and now there are protections against wild horses. And she was a big documentary, she participated in many documentaries, and she did a big documentary on Jane Fonda. She also worked, getting away from animals, on an important documentary about an interracial couple in Virginia. It was one of the last interracial couples that married in Virginia when it was illegal. It was a black woman and a white man. And by getting married, they violated Virginia state law. That law was finally overturned by the Supreme Court in 1967. But she worked on an important documentary highlighting that that case and that marriage. So that's Hope Ryden, age 87. Now, before I get to the last obituary, I want to break into a pair of stories. Millions of people in America are going to get their credit scores, credit reports, revised and improved. This is a Anna Kasparian story, if I've ever seen one, because consumer advocates group and governments are now forcing credit reporting agencies, and there are three main ones, to treat two items differently. Civil judgments and tax liens. Before, they had consumers were punished severely for just having a hint of a problem with tax liens or civil judgments that had been passed against them, even though the credit agencies did not have really full reports on what the problems were. Now there are new regulations in place where if you're going to lower somebody's credit score because there's a tax lien against him or her or a civil judgment, you have to have a lot more information about that case. And in most of the cases, like half of them, all of that information is not recorded because the violation was actually not that severe. So for all these years, people's credit scores have been hurt just because they tangentially might have had some tax lien or civil judgments problems. But now the standards to punish people in their credit score for those reasons are much stricter, higher standards, and millions of people will now have their credit scores revised upward and improved because they are not actually in any kind of credit trouble due to tax liens or civil judgments. And this is an example of the government working well to help consumers. This is a typical Elizabeth Warren, you know, Consumer Finance Protection Board improvement. So I wanted to bring that up. And segueing from that financial story to another one, the CEO of a banking company, SunTrust Banks, is now, he instituted a policy where he gives his bank employees special time off to address their financial concerns. He and his bank and his other, you know, company leaders noticed that a lot of their employees, even though they work for a bank, were not very well informed on financial matters and did not have a high financial IQ. And they had a lot of financial problems and stresses which they were bringing to the workplace, and it was degrading their work performance. So on top of sick time and vacation time and maybe other benefits they have for loved ones or kids in school, SunTrust Banks now has time off where you can go and just get your finances in order. And not only that, but they've contracted with some services so that they come in, these services or these consultants come in to the bank and provide financial counseling to the SunTrust employees so that they can teach them how to manage their finances better. Now, I really like all of this, except the time off, my philosophy on that is different. I don't know why they have to have time off dedicated to financial, you know, review your financial, reviewing your personal finances. Just give all your employees ample, generous vacation. And if you take it off, if you take a day off because you got to look over your finances, or if you take a day off because you want to go to the beach, that's the employee's decision. I don't get why companies have to have specific time off for financial health, even though I like the sentiment of it. And what if you happen to be a SunTrust employee and you have very good finance, your finances are all in order, then you never get to take advantage of this. And that's not fair either. The one thing Cenk would like about this is there are other companies who signed up for the same program SunTrust has and give people time off and financial wellness training. And one of them is the company that makes Little Debbie's snack cakes. So another liberal-minded company. And Cenk, I believe Little Debbie's is one of his, maybe I'm wrong about that. It's one of the snacks that he talks about on the show. Well, now he can be happy. The company treats its employees well. So that's my thoughts on SunTrust and time off for financial wellness. And the final obituary, I don't have in front of me, so I hope I get the guy's name right. Gary DeCaro. I wish Bart were here because Bart alerted me to this. He was the singer of a late 60s band that called Steam that... And he was the writer and producer of the song that everyone knows now, especially from sporting events. Na, 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 hey, hey, kiss him, goodbye. And now it is institutional and iconic and legendary. I always just assumed, never having thought about it, that that's a song that just always existed. But no, obviously someone wrote it, and it was this guy who just passed away earlier this week. He and some of his bandmates had various bands, and when he was with one of them, they wrote this song. Then they created another band called Steam, and that song is attributed to Steam. However, it's an interesting old, you know, 50-year-old Milli Vanilli case where Steam actually didn't perform the song. This guy, it's terrible that I don't have his name in front of me, but he wrote the song and sang it, and then they got these other performers to lip sync the song, and it became a number one hit, even though it was all a fake band. But the song is real, and it was written by someone, and everybody's heard it, especially in sporting events. Most recently, the Democrats, in a pathetic move, sang it to the Republicans in the House of Representatives when the Republicans passed the Obamacare repeal. But the Democrats are sad because they have no business celebrating. They're the bigger losers than the Republicans. But as we go out on this obituary rich postgame show, Gary DeCarlo passed away. Gary DeCarlo, thank you, is the writer and singer of this song, which you all know, and here we have it. And enjoy your 4th of July weekend. So, if I understand the article correctly, these guys are all lip syncing. They're not the real band. They're not anything. Gary DeCarlo wrote the song. It became a number one hit in the late 60s. Huge now. We'll listen to the chorus one more time and then we'll head out for the 4th of July weekend. And that's a wrap. Thank you, everybody.